Hello, Sunday Night's Main Event listeners. Jason Agnew here, and we've got one of our podcasts that we do on a weekly basis for you coming up next. It is a free sample of The Old Fucks. Yeah, that's right. So it's All Elite Weekly, but it's my longtime co-host, Dan the Mouth Lavransky, along with his partner, Joe Aguinaldo. They are the Old Fucks parodying the Young Bucks, and they're giving you a Dynamite review. So remember, each and every week, these guys get together to review Dynamite. To get this podcast every week, just sign up at patreon.com/SNMEradio. You'll get this show and get daily shows covering the world of pro wrestling. So with that in mind, let's get into it. Dan Lavransky, Joe Aguinaldo, they are the Old Fucks reviewing Dynamite.
Well, Mr. Tony Khan, ladies and gentlemen, I have to say, he thinks he can run the world of wrestling. Can he run the U.S. government? How's that for the cornball opening? That'll be the cornball opening.
Oh, God.
How's everybody doing today? Dan the Mouth Lavransky here, along with Joe Aguinaldo, ready to talk some AEW with you, mainly focusing around this week's episode of Dynamite, because there was a lot of stuff going on, including two pretty major debuts on the roster that we'll get to. But I wanted to start with just a little chit chat off the top about this Tony Khan thing. I thought it was pretty funny. This website Pro Football Talk reported that Tony Khan had filed to run for Congress in Florida, and it's totally not true. Tony Khan already responded and said, no, I'm not running for Congress. This filing is faker than Eddie Gilbert's apology to Tommy Rich in 1984, which is super old Memphis wrestling reference there. So yeah, just weird. Now, I don't know anything about Pro Football Talk. Like, do you? Who are they?
For lack of a better description, they're kind of like a quote-unquote dirt sheet for football fans. You know, sometimes they get some stuff right, sometimes they don't. Obviously, this yeah. time they definitely didn't get it right. I do, as an older fan, totally appreciate the Eddie Gilbert, Tommy Rich reference from 84, because probably much like yourself, I actually remember that angle. So I thought that was pretty outstanding.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's the place to keep your obscure wrestling references in your tweets. You don't need to parade them out there for the audience you're trying to grow. Just keep them in your tweets.
And the thing is, like, that's a deep cut, man. You know what I mean? That's not like, you know, Dusty Rhodes and the Four Horsemen. No. We're getting into some deep cut territory stuff.
And even though it's 84, you know, first year of WWF expansion, it's like it's nowhere near on any kind of huge level. That is a pretty obscure reference.
I love it.
So there you go. He definitely likes his pro wrestling and knows his pro wrestling. So let's get into the latest offering, which, you know, a lot of these are, he's pretty well the main booker here, so he's steering the ship. This week, February the 9th, they're in Atlantic City. There was a lot of big stuff on this one. We had the world title match. We had all this stuff with MJF and Punk. We had another Jade Cargill match. But let's start at the beginning here. I really dug the way the show started. I got a kick out of this because it was so different. Like, just, hey, it's Wardlow, and he's bringing all this stuff out of the ring. The announcers are talking, and we see Wardlow, and he's got two giant cutouts. One is of MJF when he was sitting on Punk at the end of the match last week, and the other one was one of him having Punk in the sleeper. And they were big, huge, full color cutouts ready that he had. He had to put them up in the ring. He was propping them in the ring. Now, he takes them in the ring, and he goes up to Justin Roberts for this intro stuff, and he tells him, and so Justin Roberts introduced FTR and Tully and Sean Spears first, so they come out as well. The announcers, great bit of storytelling here, just in case you didn't catch it, made the note that, oh, yeah, everybody gets an entrance but Wardlow. Wardlow had to come down carrying the cutouts. I'm like, okay, that's very good. Then after that, Justin Roberts does this super long extended intro for MJF. I'm not going to go through the whole thing. He did say, puts shoulders on the mat and bangs all the rats. That was one of the lines in there. It was insanely long. Wardlow is just standing there looking like, oh my God, you know, he's got that totally not impressed look on his face. And then as if the long, super long intro wasn't enough, they throw it right over the top and MJF comes out being carried on a throne. He's doing the wave like the Queen when people parody the Queen and stuff like that. There's a couple of hot chicks there. When the chair gets up to the ring, he gets a kiss from each other. One. Actually, he just totally swaps spit with the one. They're just diving right in there.
I think that second one was actually his girlfriend.
Was it?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. So this was pretty crazy over the top intro here with the MJF coming out on his throne. But you know what? It worked. Because by the time he started the promo, this crowd was booing like mad.
It was heat, baby. Just heat.
Yeah. They did such a great job. Like, the crowd is totally booing him. He's even trying to quiet them down. And so he finally gets into it. He said, you know, after last week, I'm the best wrestler. It's not Kenny Omega or Brian Danielson or Adam Cole or the champion Hangman Page. He goes, I beat Punk twice in Chicago, so I'm better than the best in the world. And he kept making the joke all through his promo about beating Punk twice in Chicago. He said, but last week was bittersweet. And then at this point, huge shut the fuck up chant. Like, you know, it was very, very, very loud. And he handled it great, though. That's one thing. He's so great at handling things turning on a dime. And when a chant starts, he's like, hey, I'm just getting started. So it's just like, hey, I'm not shutting up anytime soon. So he said that he realized that when he beat Punk last week, that he'd beat someone he saw on his TV screen while he was growing up. And he said he leaned over to Punk after he beat him, and he said two heartwarming words, you know, building up the big moment here. And then in the heel fashion, he goes, you suck. And then he said, if anyone deserves a thank you for what they've done and how he helped them beat Punk twice in Chicago, this big strapping lad. So it looks like he's totally building up to, he couldn't have done it without the help of Wardlow. And then he says, big strapping lad, and he introduces Sean Spears. And it's like the whole thing's like, Sean, I couldn't have done it without you. And this, and Wardlow's just standing there looking like, what? You got to be kidding me. I'm the one that handed you the ring to hit him to make the win. So Wardlow's standing there. He's not happy. You can tell he's pissed. I think he had the bottle of champagne or whatever. I think he took a big slug off of it right after that part. I thought, oh, wow. That's amazing. So Spears pipes up and says to MJF, thank you. I have a gift for you. And they showed the design for MJF's new T-shirt on the big screen. MJF continued and said, yes, I really am better than Brett in Canada and better than Piper in Portland. And I'm sure as hell better than CM Punk in Chicago. He goes, it's time to become world champion. Well, this brings out Punk. Comes out on the ramp. He kind of gestures over to the commentators. Tony comes running over to talk to him. And he just stood there. He didn't try to take the mic from Tony or anything. He let Tony do his job. Punk said, your win over me in Chicago is about as suspect as your spray tan. He goes, I don't like to ask for help, but I've learned from my mistakes a couple of weeks ago. And he goes, today I got friends. And at that point, Darby and Sting come out, and they've got bats. They've even got one for Punk. Punk said, either you give me what I want or I'm coming down there with my friends to beat you down. He goes, I want a rematch. MJF's freaking and like, no, I beat you twice. And Punk said, hey, I wasn't talking to him. He was talking to Wardlow. And Punk said, MJF wouldn't have had anything for the last 6 months if it wasn't for Wardlow. And Punk said, Wardlow could be on the end of the beating these guys are going to get, or he could grow some balls and leave these jerks. And at this point, MJF pipes up and said, I beat you by myself in Chicago, and you know it. And he said, and Punk said, hey, did you hear that, Wardlow? And MJF said, Wardlow doesn't hang around just because I employ him, but because he's our best friend. And Punk said, shut up, give me my rematch. And MJF said, thirdly, like he was rhyming stuff off. And then he handed the mic to Dax, who said, you think I like dressing like this? Because they were in suits. He said, I don't even look good in a suit, which I thought was funny. And he goes, and then he went on about wanting a rematch. Punk went up to Sting and kind of whispered something we couldn't hear. He looked at Darby and kind of asked him something. Punk said, sign us up. The three of us want a rematch from Greensboro. So MJF's freaking out again. He said he wasn't going to wrestle in this cesspool that was Atlantic City. But he said, if you want a rematch with me and they want a rematch, he means Sting and Darby, with the world's greatest tag team. He goes, since we're in Atlantic City, he goes, how about we roll the dice? MJF said, if you can get a partner and beat FTR, I will give you a rematch anywhere, anytime. He goes, however, it can't be Tweedledee and Tweedledipshit. He meant Sting and Darby. So he said, good luck finding a partner in the locker room that doesn't hate your guts. MJF said, in the meantime, Wardlow, you need to suit up because you have a match next. And he said he was going to keep the party rolling because he was better than the best in the world, and you know it. So there you go. Big buildup at the beginning with Punk and MJF. Continuing the storyline to go on here.
Yeah, you know what? Like, I from time to time, right, one of our, let's say, critiques of any like AEW stories is always they try to pack too much sometimes into stuff, right? But in this case, not a problem. Like, there were like a couple of underlying or like sort of parallel threads that were sort of in play, but they didn't interfere with each other. They all made sense. I really dug this opening, like this whole opening act. Like, number one, I remember I think I posted this on the Facebook page a few times. When MJF won, I was like, oh man, what are these promos gonna sound like? You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
I love the fact that he's like, I beat Punk twice. I beat Punk, like, again, so like, that's so heel. Like, I can hear, like, for example, old school Larry Zbysko saying something like that. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right. Yeah.
You know, the whole Wardlow storyline, like, this is still pushing the Wardlow storyline from like the fact that he was the only one that didn't get like an actual entrance.
Yep. Yep.
And the fact that, you know, he like, throughout the whole time, he had these facial expressions, you know, the whole diss by MJF about, you know, I want to thank the guy that trained me, Sean Spears, you know what I mean? And then, you know, then you have the history with the FTR Sting Darby, you know, when they were six. So there was a lot of stuff going on, but it all made sense. Like, I it was entertaining in the fact that like just the promos were entertaining, but like if it again, the one thing we do like about AEW is that if you're paying attention, they'll throw these little like sort of Easter eggs in there, like, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh, you know what, that makes sense from 3 weeks ago. So completely, on a whole bunch of levels, appreciated this opening segment.
I think they've done such a great job with the Wardlow thing, and the fact that they have let it cook and cook and cook and cook and cook, like at this point they have got the fans at such a fever pitch that whatever
yes, they do.
He comes out, they're totally intrigued as to what the hell's gonna happen.
Yep.
And it's like, when I mean, the thing that is kind of weird about it is when they pull the trigger, like, I mean, he's gonna have to have a big program with MJF. But what happens after that, and will it be, they be able to maintain it? Like, I'm looking way down the line, but you know, it's amazing how what they've done so far and how amped people are to see the next stage and what happens. So, and that's great. And if you can build it out and not keep it going too long till people aren't interested anymore, but if you can, it's such a tough line, right? But right now with Wardlow, they're on the right side of the line for sure.
Yeah, but that said, though, I think they don't have a lot of time to execute this, mainly because of the way, like, before it was kind of like, you know, maybe a look every other week or every month where you kind of thought, wait a minute. But like now it's obvious that he's not happy, right? So again, you're right. They still are on the right side of the line in terms of timing, but I don't think they
can't
can push
go much
this
longer.
Exactly. Yeah. And now that said though, and now I'm getting into way down the line too, but I think really what happens is let's say he turns in, let's say 3 weeks. Okay. Whatever. 3 weeks he turns. I don't think you have him with MJF yet. I think you have him go through the pinnacle. You have him.
Right. Like, oh yeah. For sure.
You know, Sean Spears would be the absolute first matchup he's got to have. And then you go through the rest of them and you build to that MJF match. But like, yeah, like I like, again, just this opening segment, like just had a whole bunch of stuff going on. And again, I didn't even mention the fact that, hey, it looks like we're going to get a rematch, or at least the opportunity of a rematch between Punk and MJF. And then on top of that, you have MJF sort of making that foray into, I want to be your next AEW champion, which again is a,
he's always talked about that, right?
Yes,
like, that's
exactly.
What's been so great about him is that's always been there. Right. And he's trying to make his way that in that way. Right.
Yeah. So like, again, I cannot say enough how much I thought this was a very, very, like, again, entertaining yet smart opening segment.
Okay, so they went to commercial break from there. They come back, and Tony's with Andrade and Sting and Darby. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, it was weird. Andrade and Sting and Darby, and Darby's basically trying to Andrade's trying to get Darby to work for him. You know, he's calling Sting the boss. He goes, oh, you're here with your boss, finally. Sting says, kind of looked at Darby and said, I thought you made it clear to this guy that you don't want this. And Sting said, look, man, he's on his own. It's got nothing to do with me. He's not a kid. He said, if you got a dispute with Darby, he goes, talk to him, mano a mano, which I thought was really funny from Sting. And Darby said, stop wasting your time. I have bigger things to do than work for you, like becoming the next TNT champion. And Andrade said, but you will work for me. We both have something in common. You want the TNT title. He goes, but I am the next TNT champion. And he left. He just kind of walked away. And Sting kind of looked and said, well, I know one thing. He seems to mean it. And like, that was it. It was weird, man. It was a really weird segment just because I don't know. I thought it was kind of weird, especially after coming off what we had just seen with Sting and Darby. Why all of a sudden this silliness with Andrade?
Yeah, like, okay, I will admit, I do get a kick out of Andrade saying, like, you know, finally, I found your boss. I know, you know, this kid works for you. I think that's hilarious that he thinks Darby works for Sting. But yeah, like, overall, though, I mean, okay, I'm going to go with what I liked. The one thing I liked about this is that, like, Darby, when he said, you're wasting my time, I want to win the TNT championship. And then Andrade said, wait a second, I want to win it. So I like the fact that, like, and you know, we just talked about MJF. All these guys are saying, I want to win the title. Love that. Elevate your titles. That's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, that said though, this promo itself, it's just weird. Like you said, I know what they're trying to do, but the execution just, it's not working.
Wasn't quite right. Yeah, it wasn't quite right. So I'm guessing then that both Darby and Andrade end up in the ladder match.
Yeah, the Face of the Revolution thing or whatever. Yeah, for sure.
I'm guessing they're both going to be in that match.
And again, it's fine. Like, I don't have a problem with it. And again, conceptually, I understand where they're going. Everyone understands. Like, we get where they're going. Just the execution of this is just really effing strange, man. I think, at least for me, sometimes what it is
when you have guys kind of in two separate things and they're not kind of associated, like, you know, you were seeing them all the time now with Matt Hardy and that whole thing with the AHFO.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden here he is with like Sting and Darby, and I guess he's trying to bring them into the AHFO, but I don't know. I thought it was kind of weird.
But now think about it. Like, remember off the top, we were just talking about how one of our critiques of AEW is sometimes they try to pack a whole bunch of stuff into one thing. well, this is a case of where they're trying to like again, it different from the whole Pinnacle thing at the beginning, because all of those stories are intermingled. This is just weird. Like, you've got the AHFO, and it, like, remember when Andrade and Hardy teamed up in the first place? I think you and I were like, what the hell? Like, what the hell is this? So right out of the gate, you've got that problem. And then again, with due respect, Andrade's promos are not helping the situation.
No, you know what I mean? I think for me, what's happening here is I'm kind of getting burned out on the Andrade and the character that he portrays.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not really doing anything for me. It's the same every week. I don't know. It's not really cutting it. So we'll have to see, but not digging it too much at the moment.
No.
Okay, so we go into the next match, which is the Wardlow match that MJF mentioned previously. It's against the Blade. Spears is the only one that comes out with Wardlow. We don't see any of the rest of them that were out there, like FTR and Tully. Blade attacks him before the bell goes after the knee, therefore establishing basically that Wardlow is the babyface already in this match. Because Wardlow's selling the knee all throughout the match. This was a weird piece of JR commentary during this match. Spears was eating something at ringside while he was watching the match, and JR says, "You don't eat food on television unless something is up."
Yeah, you know what?
Does that mean like food fight? Like, I couldn't figure out what he was trying to get at there.
It was, I'll admit, he said it, and I kind of went... And then I just kind of moved on with it, but that was a weird line. I didn't get where he was going with that.
Like, JR had a couple on this show where you just kind of scratched your head and went.
See, what? And that's the thing. Like, I wonder, like, because, you know, JR is an older guy, right? You know, remember, like, one of the things that used to bug us, even though we knew who he was he would always reference Don Jardine the Spoiler, right?
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if it's JR trying to be clever with, like, a pop culture reference from, like, you know, 1965. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't know.
I don't get it. I was totally perplexed. So, anyways, they went to pick and pick. Wardlow beats them up all through the pick and pick. The finish, it's the same finish of every Wardlow match. 4 power bombs, and the standing pin to win. And Spears, of course, hits him with the chair afterwards to Wardlow's disdain, the way he always... And the announcers play up how Spears is trying to steal his thunder. So there you go. You know, when they do have the turn and Wardlow does have to go through all the Pinnacle guys, with his match with Sean Spears, after he gives him the 4 power bombs and he pins him, he has to hit him with a chair.
Yeah, absolutely.
He has to.
I do have 2 comments about this match. Number one, like, during the pick and pick, there was a lot of interaction between Wardlow and Spears that looks storyline that shouldn't have been in pick and pick. Right. Now, I get it. It's all timing. I understand. But, man, like, when I'm watching the pick and pick and I'm seeing Wardlow jawing back and forth with Spears, I'm like, you can't have this in the pick and pick because this is all storyline stuff, right? And then the other thing, and I think I mentioned this before, but I'm going to give kudos to Spears because he is I think he's lately been a huge part of the reason that, you know, Wardlow like is getting the cheers because everyone hates him after those matches. You know what I mean? Right. Like Wardlow's almost getting like, you know, victory sympathy for lack of a better term. And so kudos to that guy, man. I feel bad that he's kind of playing this weird comedy character with the chair, but I think he's doing the best he can with it, and he is definitely a big part. Like, when Wardlow turns, he will definitely be a big part of that.
Right. After this, we went to a promo. Penta, this was really interesting. Penta, a little promo film here. It had Alex Abrahantes doing the voiceover, though, and he was saying, Penta says that when Malachi Black spit the black mist in his face, he spit into his soul. Penta says, you want to live in the darkness? Then you should be prepared to face the consequences. Penta says, it's time to rise. Penta old school, I think is what he said. And we saw Penta digging in like a grave, and he pulled out an old mask. So is this some sort of reference to a Penta character from the past. I'm not sure what's happening here.
He had like a sort of a old school character, like Penta Dark or something like that.
Okay, so a more darker character.
I think it was like Pentagon Dark. We're talking back in the Lucha Underground days, right?
That sounds familiar.
Dark. So yeah. Now that said, though, okay, like remember how we've been talking about this for the last 3 weeks now. About this, the whole supernatural thing, and
it's
a very fine line.
Yeah.
So I'm willing to give this Penta Dark thing a chance, right? But like, it's already on shaky legs with this whole Malachi Black thing. Like, I don't even know where to go with this. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So I like, and like the. Like, again, you know what? It's very like much like Miro. We know the matches are going to be good. Like, we know that. But are we going to care because we don't like the character?
Yeah, it's a weird one. I want to see where they're going with it. I mean, if it just means he turns into an even nastier, mean wrestler, fine. I don't want a ton of supernatural shit attached if possible, right?
Well, and again, here's the problem. What was Lucha Underground?
As
the wrestling was, they had some crazy ass storylines about like 10,000 year asteroids.
That eventually took me out of Lucha Underground. Is that the storylines were just too ridiculous, wrestling, right?
So, and that's the thing. Like, so you're gonna like again everything that Malachi Black. And again, I don't get me wrong. I want to see the performers do well. But I just cannot get into this storyline or these characters. And now you're going to do – like, remember they – pack the whole I'm blind, but now And now you're going to Penta Dark. And then you've also got this weird Julia Hart, like, Patty Hearst syndrome thing potentially happening.
Yeah,
so, like I'm not sure – like, again, I hope that they figure out the character because I do see what they're trying to do. And, conceptually, I get it. But the execution so far has just been flat for me.
Okay, so after this, one of the big items for tonight's show, the meeting of the Inner Circle, because what better place to hash out all your problems than in the middle of the ring in front of everybody? That's what we all should do, right? Let's have those big economic summits. Let's have all those meetings of world leaders in a wrestling ring in front of a huge crowd.
Yeah, Dan, next time you and I have a conflict, let's set up a Zoom meeting and invite everybody from the Facebook page.
Yes, exactly. They can all watch it. So Jericho comes out. Sammy and Jake are with him, but of course not Santana and Ortiz. Jericho says they haven't seen Santana and Ortiz all day. But of course, that's the cue. Their music hits. They come out, and it was different music. It was not their Inner Circle music. Jericho says, "Look, I understand you want the spotlight," but he asked him about the tag a couple of weeks ago. He goes, "You wouldn't tag me in. You embarrassed me. You robbed our fans who paid a ticket to see me wrestle. It was unacceptable and disrespectful. Why did you do it?" And Santana's just like, "Enough of this phony shit," he goes. "For the last few months, I've been struggling with this cup half full mindset. But sometimes you have to call him as you see him and call a spade a spade." He goes, "Chris Jericho only cares about Chris Jericho." He goes, "Anytime we shift our focus, it's always to the benefit of one person, Chris Jericho." And he says, "Am I wrong?" He goes, "Anytime we do get the spotlight and it looks like we could be on our way to the tag titles, it gets shut down and thrown to the side so we can come to your rescue." He said, "Am I wrong?" He goes, "We've come out here to tell you face to face that the days of playing second fiddle are over and done." He goes, "At the end of the day, it was always you who stood in our way, and you made sure you had a bigger spotlight than us. But it was them," and he pointed at the fans, "that kept us going."
I can I just jump in here real quick? The other thing I really liked about that particular part of the promo is that every time Chris tried to respond back, Santana would be like, I ain't done. Hold up. Take that mic away from your face. I ain't finished." I was like, wow, that's pretty strong.
Yep. Where did we end? He's in their way, right? He goes, he said he was telling them that all you better look in Ortiz's face. And they thanked him for everything you got. He goes, you know why? He goes, because if it wasn't for him, I would have dropped your ass a long time ago. So Santana basically saying, because of Ortiz, I would have taken you out long ago. And then he took off his shades. And then he says to Jericho, to your point, now you may speak. And Jericho says, well, you remind me of my old friend, Eddie Guerrero. You get hyped up. You want to blame everybody, even your closest friends. He goes, you're going back to this whole tag team title thing that Eddie Kingston planted in your head. He goes, what the hell did Eddie Kingston ever do for you in AEW? He goes, what kind of stroke does he have? None. He goes, I'm an influencer. And since you came in 2019, you've been in main events on pay-per-views, Dynamite, Rampage. You made more money in your lives with this company. And you still want to put your shortcomings on me? He goes, you had a chance to be tag champs February 17th, a year ago. He goes, but you lost to the Young Bucks. He goes, that had nothing to do with me. He goes, I brought you to the, he goes, remember, I brought you to the Inner Circle. I can kick you out. Jericho said, looking back, he goes, maybe I did pick the wrong two members of LAX to join the Inner Circle. I'm like, ooh. And then he looks at Jake Hager and asked him if he had the number for Homicide and Hernandez. And that was it. Santana just dives on him and goes for the jugular. Like, literally, he was basically strangling Jericho. Sammy tries to get in there, tries to get him to stop. He said, hey, man, we're a family. He separated them, but Jericho exploded, told him to shut up. And Santana's like, see how he is, see how he is. You know, Jericho stops, he pauses. This is the crowd's doing a big chant for Sammy. Jericho's trying to talk to Sammy, but Sammy just cuts him off and says, save it. He said he didn't know what was going on, but he loved them and they were his family, the Inner Circle forever. He goes, but I have to say, Chris, my goal is to be the greatest champion in wrestling ever. And all this bickering back and forth will not help. And he took off the Inner Circle vest and he said, I've quit before, but unless you guys can figure this out, I'll quit again. And Sammy left. So at this point, Ortiz grabs the mic. He said, what'd you expect, Chris? He goes, you threw out threats. He goes, Sammy walks away. What's next? He said, you couldn't have the facts more twisted. You said Eddie Kingston's never done anything for us. He goes, you couldn't be more wrong. He goes, Eddie Kingston is one of our brothers in arms. He goes, all this bickering and moaning we're doing in the ring isn't going to settle anything. He goes, let me give you a history lesson to where we come from. He goes, where we come from, and he goes, where we come from, if we have an issue, we don't do, and he makes this kind of motion with his hand. He goes, we deal with it by doing this, and he makes a fist. And he said, next week, Santana and Ortiz versus Hager and Jericho, and we settle this once and for all. And Jericho's like, well, you know, I didn't want it to come to this, but if you want to fight, maybe after Jake and I smack your faces around, you'll have an attitude adjustment. And if you don't, we'll have to make some changes. And Santana, he's just looking right at the camera here, like to the audience at home. And Jericho said, you better be here next week because attendance is mandatory. And again, Santana smiles super wide into the camera, looking right at the audience at home. And they left.
Little bit of fourth wall break in there, eh?
No, totally. Reminded me in the old Laurel and Hardy films. Even back then in like the 20s and 30s, Hardy did it all the time. Whenever Laurel did something ridiculous, he would look right at the camera like that as to like, oh, do you guys see what I have to put up with kind of look? Like, and that's totally what Santana reminded me of when he did that in this.
Yeah, you know what? Man, I really like this, this segment. I'm going to say I like the Pinnacle segment a little better, but this was still really good. You know, you could see the heat building between Santana and Ortiz. You and I have already talked about, we want to see them in a more prominent role in the tag team division, not the Inner Circle. So, you know, there's an element of truth here, you know what I mean? An element of, like reality, you know, and it's, you know, just all from that one line from Eddie Kingston, like that, hey, you know, the person holding you guys back is Chris Jericho, which I think is, you know, some pretty good stuff going on there.
So, well then, okay. So when this happens, then, like, you know, like, who's, like, are Santana and Ortiz, are they the baby faces or the heels? They're the baby faces, aren't they? And Jericho.
Oh, yeah, no, I was actually going to mention that. Like, there were some subtle things that Jericho said. Maybe this is just me. Maybe this is just me, like, reading into it a little too much. But, like, there were some subtle things that he said where I'm like, that's kind of heelish. Like, for example,
yeah,
like, when he said, like, you know, they pay, like, the crowd paid to see me wrestle. You know what I mean? Like, again, little heelish there when he said that I'm the influencer. Same thing. Like, you know, like that's sort of still drawing attention to himself. Like, you know, Eddie Kingston's nothing. I'm the influencer of this, of the Inner Circle. Right. So that's, you know, that's kind of the way I look at it. Like, even the whole thing when, like, the way that he described, you know, hey, you guys had a title match with the Young Bucks. I didn't do anything. You guys lost that yourself. You know what I mean? Like, so I do see, like, Jericho and Hager sort of, like, being the heels in this program. Like, you know, maybe afterwards they, you know, make up or whatever, they have a respect angle, but I think Jericho and Hager are going to be the ones that, you know, people are going to boo, right? And, like, and sorry, and the one big one that I missed, shut up, Sammy, right? When he yes. said shut up, Sammy, yes. he got booed pretty big, you know what yes. I mean? And again, very subtle, like, hey man, this is all about me kind of thing. And I, you know, I really dug Sammy's little line. I thought that was good. And you know what? Ortiz, man, that guy is so underrated. He's really
good. I agree. Yeah. Okay. So, after this segment, which, I enjoyed it as well. I'm very curious to where the storyline goes and where everybody ends up.
Can I just say though, before we get off the subject, I know that FTR still has some legs with the Pinnacle, but I really hope that FTR does the same kind of thing where they, like, maybe not a breakup of the Pinnacle, but where they finally break away, get them in the tag division.
Yeah.
Right. Full time.
Right.
Near the top. Like much like Santana and Ortiz, these guys need to be near the top or in the mix at the top of this division. Absolutely.
Okay. So after this, it's Tony with Roppongi Vice, so it's Rocky Romero and Trent. They're going to do Roppongi Vice versus the Young Bucks on Rampage this Friday. Rocky Romero says he's ready, the world is ready, and the Bucks, of course, come in. They interrupt right away. Matt said, hey, we saw you were doing an interview. We thought we'd come and say hi. Nick's not as nice. He says, screw that. He goes, how about we fight right now? And Nick kicks Trent. Adam Cole runs in, takes out Rocky Romero. They give Rocky the BTE trigger, and then they're going to do the same to Trent. But then Jay White comes in. He throws Rocky into the transport truck behind him. White looked at Nick and said, nice earrings, and left. So Jay White, all of a sudden, Jay White, we had been told going into this episode that Tony Khan would have big announcements. Although both of the debuts that were big on the show were not in forms of announcements. These guys just showed up. So, yeah, what do you think, Joe? Jay White in the mix now.
You know what? Like, it's kind of weird because, like, let's just say Tony Khan had not announced or said that he was, you know, a big time player was coming in, right? This would have been still pretty, you know, pretty hardcore, especially for, like, New Japan fans. So I was kind of like I didn't think that Jay White was the big announcement, quote unquote, or the big reveal, but at the same time I was pretty excited when it came out. I was like, oh, this is
yeah.
cool. You know,
I mean, it's all in the follow-up, right?
Yeah,
sure, a lot of people don't know who it is, but hey man, you follow up next week and you put a package together and you explain who the guy is and put it in the context of what he did with these guys, then it'll be fine, right? It's just that, and they'll do that. They'll explain to people who it is. And yeah, like you say, for your hardcore base that's been there for day one, they get an extra bonus and go, whoa, Jay White. You know, they already know how good he's going to work in with these guys, right?
So, and again, I thought I saw, like, someone posted on the Facebook page that the announcers did this, but I'm not sure if you caught it. Like, did one of the announcers actually talk about the fact that, like, Jay White and Kenny Omega had, like, a, like, you know, they were kind of feuding pretty hard, right, in the past? You know what I mean? So
yeah, like, I'm not sure. I didn't catch it. Might have. I didn't catch it.
Because if they did, then now you've got even more of that sort of layer building where you see kind of is Adam Cole's faction going to split from the Super Elite. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I mean, yeah, like again, especially as fans of like these guys, like this sort of, you know, the Super Elite or whatever, the Bullet Club, whatever you want to call them. I'm really intrigued to see where does this Jay White thing lead? Cause I really like Jay White. I know he's not necessarily, I know a lot of people are kind of, you know, people are kind of hot and cold on him, but I really dig Jay White. I think he's a good worker. And I'll admit, I was a little surprised too, cause I thought he was more into the whole Impact thing than anything else. So I was a little shocked to see him at AEW.
Well, the shocks continued as we went through the show here. Up next was a Face of the Revolution qualifying match. So to get in to get a chance to become the number one contender for the TNT title, it's going to be at the pay-per-view. And Isaiah Cassidy from Private Party is getting his shot here. And so he comes out, and we don't know who his opponent is. And this was the other big reveal of the night. Again, not in any kind of huge announcement or anything. The person just shows up. But all of a sudden, we see that it is Keith Lee. So Keith Lee, obviously his non-compete with WWE is up. He is here. And again, of course, it's a hardcore crowd in Atlantic City. They popped huge for this when he came out. And, you know, it was just what you kind of expect. You know, Lee, the very first spot that Keith Lee did in the match with Cassidy, he just threw him. He just basically threw him right across the ring.
That was a huge ass Beal throw.
It was insane. It was a huge distance, right?
And kudos to Cassidy for exactly. Like, helping out on that. Yeah.
He just totally flew through the air. There was a bunch of neat stuff in this. I mean, it wasn't the greatest worked match in the world. There was some sloppy spots in it, I thought. But Lee got to show, you know, he's the powerhouse and stuff like that. And he's the monster coming in. And the crowd certainly was behind him. Matt Hardy, at the end, basically leaves right through the crowd. Private Party left on their own. Quinn's at ringside. He's trying to stop Lee from getting back in the ring, but Lee just shakes it off. Cassidy does a corkscrew dive to Lee on the outside. And then Lee presses Cassidy over his head, dropped him on his shoulders, and then kind of did like a Death Valley slam, I guess, kind of, and got the pin. So it was crazy. He presses Cassidy, drops him down on his old shoulders, and then gave him this kind of flip over power slam and got the pin. And Quinn came in at the end and started trying to go after Lee, but, you know, they tried to do dives onto him on the outside and catch him off guard, and he grabbed them both, and he power bombed Quinn on Cassidy, and then he power bombed Quinn, one of them on the apron as well.
Yeah, it was Quinn. He did it on Cassidy, and then he did it on the apron.
Okay, so yeah. There you go. So basically a way to get Keith Lee. He'll be in the ladder match, which is good. And basically a strong debut. Kind of weird, though. I always think it's weird when they debut guys like this, though, in the middle of some sort of not a tournament per se, but like some sort of thing like this. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like it's just so weird to see a big guy all of a sudden dropped into a high-profile match instantly. You know what I mean? But I guess they obviously have high hopes for him and they want to get him in the mix very quickly.
Yeah, like, okay, so number one, we sort of alluded to it earlier, but I have to give huge kudos to Isaiah Cassidy. I think he, like, made Keith Lee.
He helped huge. He did help a lot. Yeah. Yep.
Also, I found it funny, like, okay, so the first, like you said, the first move that he did was the huge Beal throw, right? But the second move he did was like a leapfrog and then a crossbody, and then he did like a crossbody off the ropes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this, like, that was like, to me, like my introduction to Keith Lee was a PWG match that I saw on YouTube with him, Brian Cage, and Sammy Callahan. And Keith Lee's doing like Hurricanranas, and he's doing like leapfrogs, and he's doing like, you know, like that kind of moves. And it was just so weird to see, like, because that's when I, when he went to WWE, that's what I thought he was going to do. And they, you know, they kind of made him do a bit more of the big man gimmick. So, like, I kind of made a joke on the page that, you know, Keith Lee left his feet more times in that match than he ever did in the WWE, right?
Sure.
And you know what? I'm excited to see it. Like, I mean, you know, we'd heard all the rumors that it was most likely Keith Lee. You know, I mean, even Meltzer kind of reported a little bit that, you know, he was close to signing a contract. But man, when he came out, he got a huge pop. I'll admit, I popped. I was like, "Hey, it's Keith Lee. This is awesome, right?" And you know, he wrestled a good little match. Yes, you're right. It was sloppy at times, but I'm excited to see where they go. But you know, You said something very, very early in this podcast. Follow up is the key. Got to see. That's what I want to see. Right.
Yes. Program with Miro eventually. That's what I want.
Oh, dude. Yeah.
I love the big monster dudes. Let them just get in there and go clubbering on each other. Okay. So after this, we had a recap of Mercedes Martinez and her alliance with Britt Baker. Britt said, just in case you didn't get it the first time, I brought in Mercedes and I paid her. And then it goes, Thunder Rosa says, she is never surprised, and last Friday on Rampage was no different. Goes back to Britt, who said Mercedes, so you don't get confused. Like last time, this match will be no disqualification. Martinez says no DQ, no excuses. Everybody knows that the OG badass performs best when there's no rules. Thunder Rosa said she won't back down, and next week I'm ready for the no DQ match. You don't know what you've got yourself into, so... there you go. I look forward to that match.
Yeah, who wouldn't look forward to that match? Those two know they can bring it. Although, you know what? It does beg the question. What happened to Jamie Hayter and Rebel? They haven't really addressed that yet, have they?
I'm not sure. No, I don't know. I can't remember if they were with her in this promo or not.
They weren't. It was just Mercedes Martinez. Right. So I'm just kind of wondering what's going on there.
Okay, so Sammy did his cue card thing after this. They did picture in picture, so it was him with the cards. He said, earlier tonight, I set down my vest. I walked away. I did what you said, Chris. I shut up. He goes, my actions speak volumes, though. And he goes, not about the unraveling of the IC, but the TNT title. Last week, I retained my title, but that doesn't mean I'm safe. And when he held up the card that said Andrade, he gave the finger to the camera as well. It said Andrade, Darby, and now Keith Lee. My focus belongs on one thing, the face of the Revolution ladder match. No matter who enters or who wins, I will be watching. I will be ready. I'm a fighting champion. Let the Revolution begin. Okay. So after that, we go into the big match set up earlier in the night. FTR taking on CM Punk and his mystery partner, and Punk comes out, and it turns out to be Jon Moxley. So quite an interesting match set up here. We just see Moxley's images and hear his music. He comes down through the crowd. MJF and Spears are watching the match backstage, of course, and they're genuinely freaked out when Moxley shows up.
They sold that well, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. They were like freaking out. Yeah, they were freaking out. Crowd was hot for this, to see Moxley in this match. They're chanting all through it. Dax starts off. He goes after Punk's left leg. Mox gets the hot tag, suplexes everybody like crazy. He does the double DDT on FTR. Punk gets back in there right before the commercial break, does a crazy dive onto all of them to lead into pick and pick. Mostly worked over Moxley on the outside of the ring during the break. FTR actually suplexed Moxley through a table during the picture in picture. When they came back, Mox was outside trying to beat the 10 count from that spot, but he did get back in there. He needed a tag. He wanted to tag Punk, but Punk was occupied. He couldn't get the tag he needed, but eventually gets the hot tag. Punk was in there with Dax. He's still selling the knee. Moxley's on the floor, so Punk can't tag. But Mox and Punk get it together. They do the Road Warriors Doomsday device on Dax for a near fall.
That was awesome, by the way. I love that.
Everybody liked seeing him do that one too, right? In Chicago as well. Moxley got DDT'd on the floor by Cash. Dax had Punk in the ring, and then Cash had the ring bell, and he corked Punk, and Dax got the brainbuster, but it still wasn't a finish. It was a near fall. Punk was in there with Dax and Cash tagged in, but Punk didn't see it. He tried for the go to sleep on Cash, but Dax stopped him, and then the two of them gave him the big rig, but Moxley broke that up. So building to a pretty big climax here. FTR had Punk. They were going to give him the stuff pile driver, but Moxley came up from behind. He grabbed Dax, who was the one holding Punk to drop him. Mox locked in the choke on Dax, and then Punk got the Anaconda Vice on Cash. But Aubrey's busy, and Tully's distracting. Tully comes in, breaks it up, so they can't do the finish. They can't win the match. He tries to cork Punk, but he got him up, gave him the go to sleep with some trouble. He tried to, you know, with Tully. He actually was trying to lift Tully. They had some trouble getting it up there, but he tried to give him the go to sleep, but then Cash rolled up Punk, but then he kicked out. And At this point I was confused. I'm like, Aubrey, Tully's right in the ring right there. Like, why is Tully not getting them disqualified? And I know they're fast and loose with the referees and stuff, but that one to me seems really blatant. Like, I don't mind the ones where they're in and out of the ring and stuff like that, but when it's someone like the manager interfering and it's still not a DQ, I'm like, nah, I don't know about that. So Cash rolled up Punk, but he kicked out. Punk finally got the GTS on Cash. Mox hit the paradigm shift on Dax, I guess, or was it the other way around? Punk hit the GTS on Dax or Cash?
Cash.
Okay, so Mox hit the paradigm shift on Dax, and then Aubrey counted the pin. And, of course, they show MJF backstage, and he's pissed. So Punk and Moxley win the match.
Here's the thing. It was a fun match, but yeah, that last, like, the ending sequence was a bit of a cluster. You know what I mean? It was,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
And to your point too, like, the whole thing with, like, you know, ref, where are you? Like, and again, like, I agree with you. We've always said, you know, AEW, it's a little bit of a different beast with the tag teams, but you still got to maintain some semblance of, you know, the rules. And
yeah, if you, yeah, like, yeah, you know, that's it. You know, I don't mind so much the stuff where they're outside the ring and that, but stuff like that where someone like a manager blatantly interferes, right, and especially like right in front of you, like she was right there.
Yeah,
Punk was trying to give him the go to sleep.
Like,
so,
like, even I think it was the spot when they hit the big rig on Punk, and then Mox came in and made the save. Like, yeah, even that was a little sloppy. Like, there was this weird hesitation from Mox, right, as if it was like he was waiting for the ref to start the count before breaking it up. And I was like, ooh, you know. And then the other thing too, and again, this is me just now really being nitpicky, and this is something you and I have, like, talked about in the past. Like, FTR is arguably one of the best tag teams in AEW. They shouldn't be getting beat by two singles wrestlers. I don't care how good the singles wrestlers are.
That's a great point. Yes, that's a great point.
So, and look, I understand that Punk has to win the match because, you know, you got it. That's the whole MJF thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, that was the one, like, that, I think more than anything, that was the one thing that bothered me. Like, let's say they had done a tag team match with, like, Sean Spears and Wardlow versus CM Punk and a partner of his choosing. Now I can buy the fact that CM Punk and Mox win, but FTR, like, they're the former, you know, AEW tag champions, the AAA champions. Like, these guys are, you know, they're Dan Lavransky's tag team of the year from 2021.
Yeah, yeah,
how are
yeah.
they losing to two singles wrestlers?
No, that's a great point. It's very true. Yeah, very true. That's the one part sometimes, is that guys like that have to take that kind of spot, right? Yeah. I mean, the Horsemen would have to do that as well, like, back in the day, if you think about it, right? There'd be lots of times where Arn and Tully would have to take a bad tag team loss like that or something, you know?
Yeah, and again, I get it, and that's me being really picky, because I did have fun with the match, but like I did find that the ending, though, was very clustery, and that sort of took me out a little bit.
Okay, so we had a break after that. Then we came back. I just did not enjoy this at all. Next, we had the Jade Cargill match against AQA. Okay, so first off, we've never seen AQA at all in AEW. Never, ever. And they even play it up. This is her debut. She's getting a title shot on her debut. I realize the TBS title doesn't mean a lot, but like it means that little that someone that's never even wrestled, not even on Dark or Elevation, this is her debut. I was just like, okay, right off the bat, I'm like, despite what we're going to see with Jade, I'm like, already, I'm just like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, like, I think it would be different if they had, say, brought in, like, okay, so first of all, like, she is from NXT, and she has wrestled a few matches there, but, like, it'd be different if they brought in, say, somebody like Ember Moon, who you know, right?
Yeah, but
like, AQA, you probably want to have her win a couple of matches on Dark before the match with Jade, just to establish something, because,
like, it just doesn't, if you want to pull stuff like rankings and that, you can't do stuff like this. You can't throw someone that's had no matches into a title shot. Like, come on.
Well, like, you can, like, but again, I think they could have if they had done something similar to, like, you know, hey, I got an open challenge. I'm going to pick that AQA girl because she's just in, and you know what I mean? Where Jade acts
well,
like
guess what, Joe? They didn't do that.
No, I know. So, you know, like, and I know, but I'm just saying, like, they could, if they had done that, that sort of helps this match out a bit, but it,
I don't know.
Yeah. So,
anyways, I think it's hurting. And then, so they did have a little promo though on AQA. Apparently she's trained by Booker T. And the other part of it, too, it's like, hey, you're giving this girl a title shot when she's debuting. And the thing is, if Jade beats her, so what? It's her debut. Like, it doesn't even really mean that much. But for me, above all that, Jade is horrendous. She's just like, I'm sorry. I mean, I know a lot of you guys think she's getting better and she's improving, but I don't know. She still looks incredibly awkward to me. Even as down to something basic as like the way she walks in the ring. Everything looks weird to me. She's very careless. She slammed AQA early on when a really dicey kind of slam didn't really drop her properly. But they did give her the power spots. AQA went for an armbar. Jade picks her up, drops her. There was one part where Jade was supposed to get thrown out of the ring and she couldn't even get thrown out of the ring properly. They did pick and pick, which really should be outlawed for Jade Cargill matches, because I'd much rather watch commercials, even if it's Cena for that cheesy wipeout show. I watched the American feed, and the first pick and pick in the Jade Cargill match was Cena in that wipeout show, and I'm like, right now I would take this over this match. even at pick and pick size, Jade Cargill is horrible. I don't know. It's just me. I thought her push-ups even looked crappy. And I really didn't get impression that the audience really cares that much about her. And plus, even the little tiny bit that for AQA got a DDT, Cargill didn't even really sell it. AQA did a shooting star press off the top for a near fall. At this point, my notes are, this match is too long. Jade won with the Jaded. I think it was a horrible match. She's a horrible champ. I don't think she's much of a performer.
Okay, so as a counterpoint to that, because I actually like this match.
I didn't, not at all.
Again, I'm not going to say Jade is a technician in there, but I think she's getting better. And look, the other thing that I really liked about her is that she took her time between the moves. I thought that was pretty good. You know, I thought AQA actually did a lot better than I thought she was going to do. Like that was a nice shooting star press, and she actually, you know, got some offense in. And yeah, like I don't have a problem I didn't have a problem with this match at all. I was actually, you know, I thought that was one of Jade's better matches. Now, again, there's not much to, that's not a huge compliment, but at the same time, I'm giving Jade a chance. I think she's getting better. You know,
I'm not seeing it. Yeah, I'm not seeing it. I really don't see it. I just, yeah, I wish she'd had more training and stuff. I mean, it is true she has a great look, but you really should have invested a little bit more into it instead of just throwing her out there cold like that. It's not working for me in the slightest.
See, but that's the thing, because like even right at the beginning of the match too, like Jade did like a whole bunch of, like, she did sort of some arm work when I'm like, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's got to be the Bryan Danielson influence. You know what I mean? Like, so like, again, I'm not going to say she's the greatest wrestler ever, but I think she's getting better, and I appreciate, you know, what she's trying to do. But yeah, I get it though. Like, she's, like, again, she still needs some work. So
from here we go to a promo. It's the Young Bucks and Michael Cole. They set it up. Brandon Cutler is taping this. Matt said it's the Young Bucks against Roppongi Vice on Rampage. Nick said it's time to crawl back into the rankings and the titles are coming back to us. Adam Cole said, speaking of Friday, if you need backup in your match, Jay White is your man. And Matt said, yeah, thanks for mentioning that. He goes, but, you know, next time, maybe send a text message if you're going to invite someone like that. He goes, at one point, he and Kenny were arch enemies, you know. And Cole said, yeah, but at this point, you can trust me. He goes, I have never steered you wrong in the past. And if you can trust me, you can trust Jay White. He goes, I know we're the elite now, but we took an oath that in the Bullet Club, you are Bullet Club for life. And he said he was making a statement just like you guys will make a statement on Friday. And he goes, I have one to make too. And he left. And Matt asked Brandon if he knew about Jay White and said, yeah, he might have read about it on Reddit. So, yeah, goofy little joke at the end there.
But again, so, you know what? Like, just planting those seeds, right?
Yeah, exactly. Is Cole forming this other faction, right, that will take on the elite? It's great. I like it.
I do too. And I'm curious: is Jay White, like, how long is he in? That's my question.
Right. Because very good question. Yep.
Like, I remember I saw a tweet from Tony Khan saying something along the lines that he didn't sign Jay White. Until Sunday, like just this past Sunday. And I was just like, okay, so did you sign him to a contract or was this just kind of like a one-off?
One-off, thing, yeah, right. Yeah.
Because like if in fact Jay White is back, like he you've got the like him, Red Dragon, and Adam Cole, you got the Bucks, you got Kenny, who's the fourth? That's what I'm curious about.
Well, the fact that they did this promo and talked about it, to me, makes it seem like he's here for a bit.
Yeah,
Just coming in for a one and done.
Hopefully not, no.
Okay, so next up, the evil Serena Deeb. This girl, man.
This was tremendous, man.
Yeah, she's great. She really looks evil. Like, she, to me, she just exudes evil. She's got very kind of sharp features. And looks kind of nasty. She comes out and said, the last time we saw her, it took 3 minutes for her to defeat Sky Blue. She said, there's not a woman in the back that's on my level. And I'm beginning to think there isn't a woman in the back who can even go 5 minutes with me. And she goes, that's why I'm issuing the professor's 5-minute rookie challenge. And she said to her opponent, you should be privileged to get in the ring with me tonight. And if you want to put your life on the line, I will gladly be the one to dig your grave. Yeah, she's just great. She can get away with those lines and it works. And I love this concept. Okay. The 5-minute challenge. You have to beat me in 5 minutes. Can you do it?
Well, and not only that, but like Serena Deeb, she's not trying to be liked. She's not trying to be a cool heel. Like Britt Baker.
No, not at all. Oh, no, like, she's trying to be a dick.
Yeah, like Britt Baker, like even though she says the heel lines and she has the heel attitude, people are cheering her because she's got DMD. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like Serena Deeb, there's no catchphrase. There's no like, you know, like funny lines. She's just a complete like you said it, evil. I love it. I love this character. Like, she makes me hate her again in the correct heel way. I love it. I think it's great.
Yeah, I agree. So the match, it was Serena Deeb against Katie Arquette. At least Katie Arquette has actually had a match in AEW before, unlike AQA. And this was great. On the screens, they had the clock counting down. As soon as they started doing it, I'm like, oh my God, that's so great. And it was quick, man. She did it in a minute. She gave her a swinging neck breaker, put her in the knee breaker, and Katie tapped like almost instantly. 4 minutes took 1 minute for the match. So there you go. Yeah, I thought it was great, and I look forward to her destroying a bunch of heels for a while with this very concept, right?
Yeah, she's gonna go through like, you know, a couple of rookies for the next few weeks until my guess is Sheeta comes back, and that's
someone. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Like I can almost see it where they go, okay, there's no one in the back that can beat me. Who wants to come out? Open challenge, and then Sheeta comes out, and then Serena Deeb powders, and now we have a match, right? So.
Okay, so from here we go to a rundown of Rampage. So we're going to have the Young Bucks against Roppongi Vice, which actually that is going to be good.
Dude, I hope they play up the history of that, man. I know they've done it a bit in their promos, but you have to for that.
Excalibur will. Maybe they can even get footage. I don't know if they can get any footage, but I'm sure Excalibur will play it up, right?
Yeah.
Bryan Danielson is going to be there and do an interview or something. It's going to be Hook versus Blake Lee, and then the Britt Baker versus Robin Renegade. I guess a couple squashes there.
Actually, before you move forward, are you digging the Hook thing?
I don't mind it. I mean, they're keeping him strong. They're making him look good. They're giving him kind of a little bit of a mysterious edge.
Right.
You know, I don't know. It's okay so far. But again, they haven't really done much. They're really just kind of, you know, it's just jobber matches and stuff. So,
yeah, I get that he's kind of like the flavor of the month, but I'm still I'm on the fence with the whole Hook thing.
Are you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think at this point they're really just building him up, right? They've just introduced him. They want people to get to know him. So I can't really say anything yet until he's put in like substantial program or something.
Yeah, and maybe that's what I'm looking for is, like, where are we going with this? You know what I mean? But anyway, sorry, I had to ask.
And the other big match for Rampage is the title match with Jurassic Express defending against the Ass Boys for the AEW titles. So they had a little vignette to build up that match. Jungle Boy says, you beat up Christian, you threw me in the snow, but it's your entitled attitudes that I can't stand. He goes, you think you need to be on top. And then, because I can't tell Billy's kids apart, Ass Number One says, there's been a lot of talk that we don't deserve this title shot. Jungle Boy said, in the ring, you are nowhere close to us. Ass Number Two says, we are both gorgeous and athletic. And then Ass Dad steps in and said, we got two words for you, new champs. So we'll see. I highly doubt it.
Yeah. And you know what? Like it's fine. Like I don't have a problem, you know, being relatively sure that the Gun Club or the Ass Boys,
neither.
Whatever.
Me neither.
Like I'm cool. Like, hey, it's going to be a fun match. And you know what? It builds your champs for like, you know, the pay-per-view that's around the corner. Right. So yeah, no problem. And look, it's not like everyone can win the titles. Like you think that this is the whole idea behind having, you know, the champion thing. So, but I think it'll be a fun match, and you know what? It's a Rampage match at the end of the day. Right.
I want them to come out to the Danhausen version of
that
song,
would be
too.
Awesome.
I love that tune. The Ass Boy is so great.
And I wonder if he'll get involved in that match. Like even just
that would be funny. I mean, he should, I mean, again, he should.
It
like,
makes sense. Come
on. They also mentioned some stuff for Dynamite next week, the Jericho and Hager against Santana and Ortiz and Mercedes Martinez against Thunder Rosa. No DQ. Even just with those two matches alone, I'm in.
Those two matches alone, it's like I'm looking forward to Dynamite, and you know that they're going to have more, right?
Yeah. So they had a break, came back. We had the main event for the show, which is Hangman Page defending the AEW title in a death match against Lance Archer. The only way you can win is by knockout or submission. And this one, because it is a death match, it actually just started backstage. We cut to the backstage, and there's Lance Archer, and him and Hangman Page are already going at it there. They made their way out to the ramp, and the bell rings at that point. Page actually corks Archer with the belt at the beginning of the match. That's such a spot you always see at the end of the match, somebody getting corked with the belt. And I love the fact that Page did it at the beginning of the match. He threw him through part of one of the entrances, and it was like a solid glass pane. So he just went flying through that, which was pretty crazy. And Archer did color off that when Page threw him through the glass window.
That was quick too, man. Like, that was like a minute into the match. He's bleeding already.
It was. Yes. Yes. No, you're right. The color came very quick, right? Yeah. Throwing him in the glass, but that's believable color, throwing a guy through a glass pane, right?
Oh yeah. No, I'm just saying it was just really quick. That's
you're right. No, absolutely. They weren't going to fool around, right? It's death match. We got to get some color going. So yeah, Archer's bleeding. And Page is trying to go for the buckshot lariat. Archer's back in the ring. Page is like, he's bleeding. He's kind of out of it. He laid Archer out, and the ref counted, but Archer did end up getting up by 9. Page did a dive onto Archer, who was waiting with a trash can lid, and just corked him in midair. That's always, I always freak when I see that spot of somebody flying through the air like that and being getting hit in the head with a trash can lid. I just think of their neck. I mean, like, oh, so nasty.
Well, thankfully, those trash can lids aren't, like, solid. You know what I mean?
No.
But that said, I get it. Like, that's a hard shot to protect yourself from. Like, that better
it is.
That better be, like, flimsy, gimmicked garbage can lid. Because, yeah, you could hurt someone pretty bad.
At this point, all of a sudden, Lambert, well, I guess no one came out for entrances, so I guess I can't say people came out, but all of a sudden they cut to a shot and Lambert's in the ring and he's taking down the connectors from the post to the rope. So he's trying to get rid of the top rope because he figures, Page can't flip over and do the buckshot lariat if the top rope's not there. So he takes them all, and basically we just end up with the top rope laying in the middle of the ring. In fact, when they went to pick and pick, that's where we were at. The rope was laying in the middle of the ring. Archer's dominating in the pick and pick. And somewhere in this, I didn't catch it, Page got busted open somewhere in here.
Yeah,
I'm not sure when, but when they came back, he was bleeding.
Yeah, what happened was Archer grabbed the turnbuckle, and he put the hook in Page's head, and that's where Page probably did the color. Also, really quickly before you move on, I gotta admit, like, I did let my Dan Lambert bias get ahead of me like last night, because he came out and my first reaction was you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that said, like, what he did, and when the announcers explained it, I was like, you know what, that's pretty clever. So, you know, I thought, like, at first I was like, I almost gave up on the match when Lambert came out, but like, when they sort of went through what they were doing, I'm like, no, you know what? That's pretty cool. I like this. And he did, like, the other good thing about it too is that he didn't get involved physically in the match. He just did the turnbuckle thing, and then he kind of stayed out of the way, which I'm like, all right, that's fine.
Yeah, I'm not as gracious as you. I didn't really like it that much. I thought, you know, his character is he likes old school, and then he comes out and does like a super gimmicked kind of thing here. Like, come on. There weren't very many old school NWA matches that I remember where a guy came out and took out the top rope. So
that is true, but like, when I look back on watching it, like, even though I was like, even though I was like, ah, crap, it's Dan Lambert, I was still really into the match. So, you know, from that perspective, it didn't bother me as much as I thought it would.
Yeah, I guess. I didn't think you needed it. You already had a no DQ Texas death match going on. I really didn't think you needed him in there. Like, I just thought it was extra. At least the stuff with Jake looked like it's storyline oriented. I didn't like, I just don't. Bottom line, I don't want to see Dan Lambert.
Yeah, no, and that's fair. I get you. Remember, he ruins everything.
He does. For me, like, even just he was hardly in this, I know, but I'm just like, that's not what I want to see. I don't want to see that. especially in a match of this nature, like a death match. You don't need it. You don't need that. I just thought it was really ridiculous. So they go to pick and pick. Archer's dominating. Paige gets busted open. They come back. They're battling on the apron. And all of a sudden, there's two tables right below them on the ground as they battle on the apron. Paige kept trying to kick him off into the tables, but he couldn't do it. This was great on the outside. See, now this is more what I would rather see. Jake gets to grab Paige and gives him a short arm clothesline on the outside, which I thought was great. It looked good. He was actually going to give Paige a DDT as well, but then Archer pulled him off and they got in each other's faces. And I'm like, oh, this is cool. There's something going on here. Like that, at least I enjoyed. The Lambert stuff adds nothing for me. At least I kind of like this cool thing is maybe he's going to drop Jake and that's it. So
not only that, Jake's interference makes more sense because
absolutely.
He's the manager, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But he's an ex-wrestler too, right? Like
I know he can't do anything physical, but man, imagine if he had actually hit that DDT. I think that crowd would have gone nuts.
Oh yeah, they would have went nuts. Yeah. They would have went nuts. But see, that's true. But to me, this was more intriguing. I'm like, oh,
yeah,
he's stopping him. What's going on here? And because Archer did stop him, that allowed Paige to get a DDT on Archer on the floor out there. They're carrying on. Paige has got a kendo stick. Archer grabs it, breaks it in half. Then he chokeslams Paige on a trash can. And then Archer pulled a total Abdullah the Butcher here.
Oh, like, dude.
He literally had a fork. Like, I heard the announcers say it. I'm like, oh, yeah, right. And then they showed a close-up. I'm like, holy fuck. He actually does have a fork. So he went to nuts on Paige's forehead in total Abby style, stabbing him with the fork in the forehead. And then, again, true Abby, he licks the fork after he's been gouging him. That's total Abdullah. Must really like Abdullah the Butcher. Maybe that's why Archer feels there has to be color in every one of his matches, because he likes Abdullah so much. At this point, I loved it, because even the announcers were going on about, why is Lambert even here? What is this guy doing here? My exact same sentiments. To carry things even crazier, Archer gets a barbed wire-covered chair from under the ring. He throws it in. And then they ignore it and start doing these spots with the steps. It was so weird. It's like the guy just threw in a chair wrapped in barbed wire and it got basically ignored. And they went and did all this stuff with the steps.
Actually, hold on. Not just that, though. Like prior to grabbing the chair with the barbed wire, he threw like three or four chairs in the ring. Like the one thing about this match that kind of took me out a little bit was from a logic perspective, there was just some stuff that to me didn't make sense. Like let's get through the match and I'll sort of point some stuff out. But this one was the weird one. Like I agree with you that he throws in like three or four chairs from the ring, finds the one with the barbed wire. And then it was like,
you didn't
use it. Yeah. Like what's going on here? Right. Well, like didn't even threaten to use it. Right.
The sad part about it is it was to set up a spot later on. And these things, I hate that when they do that, where a couple guys set up tables on the outside and then they ignore them. And 20 minutes later, they come into play and it's like, ah, man, you just set those up for later. It's like, it takes it away from me. And that's what ends up happening with this, as you'll see as we get through the match. So anyways, yeah, throws in the barbed wire chair. They ignore it. They start doing spots with the steps. Archer gave Paige the blackout to the ring steps while he was in the ring. So he's in the ring. He's got Paige up, and he flips Paige over onto the steps on the outside. Paige even dented the steps, so they must not be those same ones they have in WWE that apparently weigh 300 pounds.
Paige bounced off those steps real, real good. I thought he was like – I was like, wow, is he okay? Like, that didn't look good.
No. So and then they get back in the ring. And now this is why we had the barbed wire chair. Paige gets the barbed wire from the chair and actually wraps it around his forearm and starts clubbering on Archer with that. and he gets the buckshot. He knocks them both off the apron. They both go through the tables. So they're both out on the floor here, went through the tables. The referee starts to do the count, and Paige gets in the ring right before the 10 ran out. Archer couldn't get back in time. So Paige wins. He keeps the title. He wins the match. And then this was cool. Adam Cole comes out right after the match. He grabs the title from the ref before the ref can even give it to Paige. And he takes it and he puts it on Paige's shoulder, making his intentions clear. So it looks like the Adam Cole Paige thing is coming. I don't know. Is that the match we see at the pay-per-view?
You know what? I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, we're
me neither.
Basically a month away from it, and I don't think you can hotshot this on a TV show. I think this is the next pay-per-view match.
Yep, so do I. Yeah.
Because it looks like there's unfinished business with Punk and MJF, so that looks like that's a pay-per-view. Hey everyone, it's a pay-per-view match. We're still going to watch it. Sorry, I had to throw that in there from last week. Regarding this match though, so I did like it. I thought it was a fun match, okay? But there were some, like I mentioned before, some logic issues that I had. So number one, like my biggest problem with this match was there were times where Adam Page, you know, your supposedly smart cowboy shit, you know, champion would literally turn his back for like a long time on Lance Archer. What are you doing turning your back? No, don't do that. Cause like every time he did that to like sort of, you know, acknowledge the crowd, it was like, no man, like beat this guy up. That's what you're supposed to do. So that always bugged me. Right. And then, yeah, like some of the stuff they were doing, like there was one point like where Archer like put a beat down on Paige. The ref kind of started counting and then he picked him back up. I'm like, no, like you're killing the gimmick of the match here. You know what
I mean? Right. So,
So like those little things kind of like they, again, maybe I'm being too picky. I don't know. But those little things took me out of the match a little bit. But again, for the most part, I did appreciate the match, and especially because I'm not the biggest gimmick match guy. Yeah. You know that. The other thing I really liked too, and now I can sort of mention it, like when Adam Cole came out, I liked the fact that he didn't try to like beat down Paige. He just kind of said, all right, I'm up next. But what I also like, and we mentioned this about the TNT Championship, but what I also like is you've got more than one guy saying, I want to be the champ. Put that belt over. And then not only that, if you have Adam Cole as a potential challenger to Paige, I want to see that match. If they have MJF as a potential challenger to Paige, I want to see that match. And that's the kind of stuff that's going to help elevate Paige. I know last week, Mike was kind of, you guys were kind of talking about has Paige fizzled out as champion. I personally don't think he has. And if he has matches like this for the most part, and if he's going to wrestle like Adam Cole, who I think will give him a good match, and MJF, who I think will give him a good match, I think Paige is going to be just fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, I thought for like a television, you know, world title defense, I thought it was a good match.
It's a pretty good match. Yeah.
I'm not the biggest fan either, but I thought they kept it interesting most of the time. Yeah. No, I thought it was perfect. Archer's the perfect kind of mid-level guy for a TV defense like that, right? And yeah, it's I like the simplicity of just Adam Cole coming out and say putting the belt and just say, hey, you know, I'm next kind of thing, right? Instead of some elaborate thing going down. So,
well, the other good thing too for Archer specifically, right, is that even though he lost the match, okay. He's now, even though he's lost, he still has this, like, they've been planning this for a couple weeks. He has this sort of program with what's up with him and Jake Roberts. You know what I mean?
Yes,
so it's not like it's not like he's dead in the water. He's got a storyline, right? And like, think about it, coming out of this, Jake's like, hey, we could have won that if you let me do my job. Hey, this should be all about me. And now you've got like another storyline happening for Lance Archer. So I don't think anyone got hurt by this.
So what happens? Do they do the Jake brings in somebody else?
I, you know what, maybe, but I mean,
because like, again, you get to use Jake to help get that guy over.
Exactly. And that's the thing. Like at this point, I don't think Lance Archer needs Jake Roberts.
Right. Me neither.
You know, like bring in like another Haas that Jake Roberts can be like, I've found a younger, stronger, more vicious Lance Archer. And then he introduces whoever comes into the company. But like, I just appreciate the fact that, you know, Page One, now he's in this program potentially with Adam Cole. Like Lance lost, but it didn't hurt him because of what the match was. And he now has a program, or he still has this potential storyline with this dissension with Jake Roberts. Just really good storytelling, you know, throughout the like, not just this match, just throughout the whole show. There's just a lot of really good stuff going on.
Yeah, this was one of the promo heavy shows, but again, that's what the television really should be, right? It's try to get ideas and concepts across so you can build on these things. So yeah, overall, I enjoyed the episode. I'm not sold on Andrade, and I'm definitely not sold on Jade. I'm sorry, but she just doesn't cut it for me yet. I don't think she should be out there.
No, and I get that. Like, look, I'm trying to be positive about this, and I am seeing some good stuff, but I'm also not an idiot, and I do see that she does still need a lot of work.
All righty, let's talk a little bit of ratings, because we do have the numbers.
Yes, speaking of, this was a pretty good show. They did 1.129 million. Which was definitely up from last week. They did a 0.41 in the demo, and that was for first place for the night. And to give you an idea of what they were,
first place,
and they were up against like the NBA, South Park, Tucker Carlson, obviously. So, you know, usual suspects. You know, good night for them. And again, it was a good show, right? Like there was a lot of good stuff going on. And I gotta believe that the big reveal, or whatever you want to call it. In fact, I think I'm gonna call this podcast The Big Reveal. But you gotta figure that probably drew a couple of eyes. I would be actually very curious though, my geek self, to see the segment breakdown. When that comes out, and usually Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics usually puts that out. I think he'll put that out tomorrow afternoon. So if I see it, I'll just post it on the Facebook page. But curious to see what drew, because especially after hearing you and Mike last week talk about the Adam Page thing, I want to see how well he did. You know what I mean? And I kind of suspect what drew in my mind is going to be the MJF stuff, the Isaiah Cassidy match because of the reveal. I'm going to say that the main event, I think, probably, you know, we'll have some pretty half decent numbers. And look, I know you probably don't want to hear this. I wouldn't be shocked if Jade did either.
Jade?
She seems to draw some numbers, whether you like it or not, you know?
Oh, no, absolutely. I could be in the minority, right? Yeah. She might end up being a star. Who knows, right?
But a good show. I'm hoping that this is like sort of the new trend for them with regards to breaking a million viewers.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think so. All right. Well, that should wrap it up. And yeah, these are definitely good enough numbers that Tony Khan does not need to run for Congress.
He should. No, not at all.
He's got an empire to run already.
I mean, if he wants to, I'm not going to stop him. But yeah, I think he might be a tad too busy.
He's got enough to take care of.
Right. Oh, but before we go, just really quickly, just want to I understand that we are on the free feed this week. So for those of you listening who are not part of our Patreon group, welcome aboard. Hope you're enjoying the show. And if you want to hear us plus a whole bunch of other wrestling talk pretty much every day of the week.
You know,
check us out at patreon.com/SNME radio. I mean, we've got a Raw podcast. We've got, you know, All Elite Weekly, that's us for AEW, NXT Talk, NXT UK, you've got Rampage, you've got the Smack Daddies with SmackDown, you got every Bam. Wrestling need figured out, Bam, for everything else. Plus, you get a rock and roll show from my man Dan here, and you get like a trivia show. So we got lots of stuff going on. It's a buck a week.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Exactly. Right. You're getting tons of content and lots of good stuff. And yeah, it's not just wrestling stuff either. There's a couple other neat things in there as well. So yeah, check it out, man. If you enjoyed this show, there's lots more for you to check out as well. Alrighty. Well, that's it for this week. And we'll be back next week and we'll have the big match with the future of the Inner Circle. What happens with the future of the Inner Circle? And of course, oh, Mercedes and Thunder Rosa.
And a no DQ as well.
Yes, yes. Be still my heart.
So there you have it. That podcast can be delivered to you each and every week right into your inbox, along with all of our other podcasts from Sunday night's main event. We're not just on Sunday nights. We're on each and every day, and you can listen on demand. And along with our wrestling podcast, we also add in a weekly 3-hour trivia show that I host on terrestrial radio across Canada. And we also add in Dan the Mouth Lavransky. Well, he loves two things in life. One is wrestling and the other is music. So we have Dr. Mouth's Rock and Roll Lunch Party for you each and every week as well. Because you know what, guys? There's more to life than wrestling. For all of these podcasts, sign up at patreon.com/SNMEradio. Only $1 a week. Hey, it's a pretty good deal. Patreon.com/SNMEradio. Don't you dare miss it.